Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the weekend. Announcement today, there will be no office hours tomorrow. I'm flying out of town this evening and then back late Tuesday night. So we'll still have lecture on Wednesday, but I'll be out all day tomorrow. So if I miss those office hours, I'll still hold the morning office hours on Wednesday. How many of you all are going to ECCE? Okay. So the following week, next week, I will be out of town all week for this conference. Friday as well. Unfortunately, I have responsibilities until Thursday evening, and with the time difference, I can't get back Friday. So I'll be gone the entire week. What I will do is class will go on as normal, and I will use either recorded lectures from previous semesters, or if they don't line up right with where we get at the end of this week, I'll record something while I'm on travel and post that to the website. I will, for those of you who are still around, try to find somebody who will come in here and play the lecture during the normal time. So if you want to stick to your schedule and have your 5:81 time be 10:10 to 11 o'clock, you can come into the class and be a recorded lecture. If you don't want to, you can watch it on your own time. But we'll continue as normal for that week, subject to me not being around. I'll try to be available as much as possible via email for any questions that happen. Yeah. There will. Yeah. Any other questions? General questions. Okay. This is this week's homework.
Yes.
Okay.
So, for the group who covered the design, do we need to overlap how long and
So, that's up to you to decide. The goal of this problem is think about doing a real converter design and just take into account all of the things that you think should be taken into account in order to design this thing. So part of it is having to think about that to some degree. So at minimum, I would say put something in there discussing or thinking about overlap and reverse recovery. And if you conclude I don't need to consider it, make a valid argument, fine. I wouldn't ignore it.
Gate drive loss, how do you estimate the gate current so that you know there will be no power loss when you
problem statement again. I think there's something in there on that, isn't there? Right. So from there on, we said in class, V drive, this would be the 1 ohm external gate resistance that I tell you you have to include gate driver setup. If you know it from the device, you might have some internal RG, and then you're driving CGS, CGD. And for overlap loss, you've got this curve that looks like this. Or this is, yeah, VGS, this is QG, right? What we said is for overlap loss calculations, you're looking at this section of the waveform here. During that time, V drive is whatever it is, and VGS changes hardly at all, right? For most of it, it's at this value, VM, and it goes down to VTH. So this circuit here, the current IG is V drive minus VGS over, I've drawn it 1 ohm plus RG. This voltage minus this voltage over the resistance. Okay. This is constant. This is approximately Vm. This stuff is constant. So with that approximation, I say, okay, this doesn't change very much, and most of the time it's Vm. This becomes a constant current. This is the same model as if this was a constant current source.
So this is by the overlap factor, you could do the VHR divided by IT to get a
overlap. Current charge per second. You got a charge, you got a current. All time. Any other questions? Okay, if not, last time we were talking about state plane analysis, and we went through using example of some generalized LC circuit with a voltage source and current source, normalized that according to a set of equations, and then based on kind of a thought experiment, decided to look at the square of the normalized voltage and normalized current with their constant term subtracted off. When we solved that out, we found that that's equal to a constant, which means that this thing looks like the equation for a circle. How did we get there? Well, we normalized according to a specific set of equations where we divided voltages by whatever we wanted, and then currents by this I base, which was V base over R naught. So both voltages and currents got divided by V base. We picked whatever we want. That's just a scale factor. The important thing was multiplying the currents by R naught. That scales current and voltage to be equal in magnitude in this normalized domain, so that we end up with an equation for a circle. From that, we were able to plot this circle out until, since we subtracted off the constant terms in our answer, those constant terms were constant values. They're the non-sinusoidal part, so they are the DC solution. Those become, in our circle, the center point. Radius is what's over here on the right. We have an expression for that, but we also know that we started our normalized initial condition. I know the center and I know the starting point on the circle. I know the shape of the circle. All I have left is what is the direction. I can solve that from looking at the first derivative of the states. So we'll plot it out an example here. Here, a more formalized altogether. V base, again, is anything you want. And then I base is V base over R naught, normalized really according to characteristic impedance. Then we have a center at the DC solution, which without going through all that math, we can solve by inspection, looking at our equivalent circuit here. And then initial conditions will come from really our converter analysis. I don't have any defined here. I just call them V naught and I naught. In any sort of converter analysis, those will come from, okay, something switches, what are the values of the capacitor voltage and inductor current right before that thing switches? Those will be the initial conditions that go into this resonant circuit. Okay. And then with those initial conditions, I can solve what are the first derivatives of the states to tell me what the direction in which I'm traversing the circle is. Initial conditions tell me the initial voltages and currents, and based on capacitor and inductor equation, solve which direction those are moving. So that's state plane analysis. Here, I just want to give an example showing why this might be useful to put us into the state plane, analyze circuits here rather than just directly through the differential equations. Again, on my M sub C JL axes, assume I have already solved and plotted the same condition as before. I have DC operating point at MDC JDC. This will be MDC here. This will be JDC. And then I have an initial condition at M naught, J naught. And a direction associated with this, which was clockwise. So, some example things we might want to do if we were analyzing the circuit and converter operation. I might want to know, as this thing rings out, got sinusoidal plus DC bias capacitor voltage and current. Might want to know something like, what is the peak current that's ever going to happen during this resonance? The insight as to things like conduction losses or peak rating. Okay, so for example, I might want to know, what is IL peak, peak inductor current? On my state plane, I can solve that. JL is my normalized inductor current. It's just a scaled version of the inductor current. So the peak inductor current is the peak JL, which is this point right here. So this would be JL peak. Let's say that IL peak times R naught over V base, or writing there is IL peak divided by I base equal to JL peak. IL peak is this, just times my I base, just denormalizing it. Well, okay, that's the easy part, but what is this JL peak? I need an expression for that in order for this to be useful. This is just telling me how my normalization works. But the nice thing there is I can really just read it off the graph, right? So I start at MDC, the peak is going to happen when I am directly above my center. Since this is a circle, the radius doesn't change around it. The radius is the same thing it was before. R and R for both of these lines. So JL peak is JDC plus R. And I can write an expression for R just from Pythagorean theorem. JL peak is JDC, my normalized DC solution, plus for R, I can look at this triangle here. As a height of M naught, or J naught minus JDC, and an X dimension of M naught minus MDC. This looks like square root of M naught minus MDC squared plus J naught minus JDC squared. Radical all the way over that. combining these two together. IL peak is JL peak times I base. JL peak is this expression. As I multiply through by I base, I am denormalizing. I'm multiplying JDC by I base, I'm going to get back IDC, whatever the current was biasing this circuit. And for this radical, I'm just going to leave it for the moment as V base over R naught times the same thing. Could further simplify if I push this V base over R naught into the radical. I could denormalize terms, get something back in my normal units. At this point, though, most likely if I'm doing this problem, it's a kind of plug in and solve. I know all these things. I know my initial conditions, my DC operating point, how I normalize. So that was able to more or less just directly read off the plot that answer. Another thing we might want to do is say, when does IL peak occur? Phrased weirdly in time. I want to know is how long does it take me after I start resonating to get to that peak current? Okay. Well, how do I know? I may have not included that slide. Part of our normalization, thetas in the state plane are our normalized time. Theta is equal to omega naught t. So in order to figure this out, what I want to know is what is theta peak and that is omega naught resonant frequency of the circuit times the time it takes to get to that peak current. Theta peak is going to be the angle as I resonate in this clockwise direction that I traverse before ending up at the peak current. Solving this TL peak is 1 over omega naught times theta peak. This theta I can solve in a few different ways. Perhaps the most direct way is to say 2 pi minus this angle here. This is some phi. Theta peak is 2 pi minus phi. And that phi, I can write in a number of different ways using trig. I can say it's the arctangent of M naught minus MDC over J naught minus JDC, arctangent of the opposite over the adjacent. I could throw the radius in there and use an arc sine or arc cosine. I really know the lengths of all three sides of this triangle. Or I could use a law of cosines or something else. I'm just going to use an arctangent. Using really this same triangle that I drew before, just reflecting it over here. Again, this length is M naught minus MDC. This length is J naught minus JDC. So this becomes arctangent of M naught minus MDC over J naught minus JDC. And from here, did the derivation to show the method, but for this example analysis, I really didn't have to do anything with differential equations. So I know my DC solution, my initial condition, and the direction. I can sketch this right off the bat, solve these parameters. You're done. Okay. So just to summarize, what goes into state plane analysis? How do I use this tool? Here I'm just going to write down the algorithm that we've been talking about, how I apply it. Okay. State plane analysis is relevant when I have a circuit with 1L and 1C, and any DC biases. I can have or I cannot have. If I have multiple inductors and multiple capacitors in the circuit, but for the operation that I'm interested in, I can reduce it down to a 1L1C circuit, it's fine as well. And do some examples of that shown previously. For example, my output capacitor, I generally approximate that as a constant voltage source within a resonant period. There'll be cases where we have both small ripple and non-small ripple inductors. Say, during a switching action, this inductor is a DC current source, but this one is not. This is a small inductor. This is a really big one. Once I get it to that point, I may need to require manipulation or approximation to get there. State plane analysis proper is really just graphing normalized states. It works fine with multi-resonant circuits where I have multiple L's, multiple C's. It's just rather useless because things become ellipsoids rather than circles, and you lose all the advantage of being able to just look at it and write the answer. It's no more simple than just solving a differential equation with that. So nothing wrong with it. It's just less useful if you have more than that. So once we get it to that point, first thing we're going to do is normalize. And normalize according to any voltage that we look at is going to become M sub X, which is that voltage over V base, where V base is unconstrained. Or can be picked however you want. I said before, there's better choices here. DC sources that are participating in your resonance are generally good sources because it'll help things cancel out. You pick an arbitrary number, it'll work. It'll just make the algebra more complicated to carry that through with you. Okay. Other normalizations, J is any current normalized by I base, where I base must be V base over R naught. And then in terms of time, angles are omega naught times time in our state plane. Done that, we can plot the resonant trajectory on your M sub X, J sub X axes, where M sub X and J sub X are the normalized voltage and current of the two resonant elements, voltage on the capacitor, current in the inductor. In order to plot it, you know is that this is going to form a circle. With center at the DC solution. One point at the initial condition. Direction from initial condition on first derivative. And by knowing those three things, we can fully define it. Then from there, we do whatever we need to. So this is a tool for analyzing circuits, so that'll come from what we're trying to solve. We want to solve for how to force a converter to achieve ZVS. We might want to know, okay, how much time does it take for this voltage to resonate up to some VDC? Solve for that time, solve to make sure it's possible, whatever it is, based on the problem, and solve for parameters of interest. Parameters of interest. And then denormalize. Get back into current voltages and times. So that's the basic idea. As we move forward, we'll complicate this somewhat by looking at multiple different intervals on one state plane and combining results from different arcs into one solution. But essentially, it'll all follow this algorithm. Any questions on that? Okay. Next slide is my animation to show what's actually happening here. So we've got some resonant circuit, and I'm plotting here an inductor current and a capacitor voltage that I've solved using differential equations, or I know this is the behavior of the circuit. And I may care about something like I mentioned previously in my example, achieving ZVS. So I want the voltage on this capacitor to go from wherever it starts down to zero so I can turn on some low side MOSFET without any COSS loss. I'm looking at just a small segment of this overall resonance. Okay. In order to apply state plane analysis, what I do is I first normalize both of these, which shifts and scales the amplitude to really make them equal, and then plot these two. They have the same amplitude with respect to one another, which will form a nice circle because I've scaled the amplitudes to be equal. If I didn't do that normalization by V base and I base, this one would be a lot shorter and I'd end up with some ellipsoid type arc, which, and I could solve things, but I don't off the top of my head just know formulas for an ellipsoid. Whereas Pythagorean theorem and what sine, cosine, and tangent are, I'm well versed in at this point, right? So those segments become a segment of a full circle in my state plane. Full circle is one period of resonance in the time domain. Okay. So let's move on and look at an example of applying this to a converter. Okay, so the first one I'm going to start with is just a DCM buck converter, and we're going to look at what happens when the diode turns off in DCM, what happens during interval 3. Okay. before we get into the resonant analysis, we're going to just review what does this thing do if I don't consider any sort of parasitics. So I want to plot switch node voltage, inductor current, diode current. IL is here. ID is here. And the switch node is this. Buck converter operating in DCM. That's three subintervals. Call them 1, 2, and 3. That have duration D1 TS, D2 TS, and then the rest of the period is 1 minus D1 minus D2 TS. In the first interval, MOSFET is on. My switch node voltage is pulled up to VG. The MOSFET shuts off, the diode turns on, and since I'm in DCM, the diode does not stay on for the entirety of the period. At this point, the diode turns off. And during the third subinterval, I have no semiconductor devices conducting. We'll just write that here. Conducting devices. M, D, nothing. Okay. That happens because my inductor current has an average value smaller than its ripple. In this first interval, we'll see the inductor current ramp up to some peak. The second interval, ramp down to zero, and then stay zero until the end of the period. My diode will conduct the inductor current only during this interval where it's on. Just to say, it'll look like this. The only thing that I haven't filled in is what does the switch node voltage do during this interval 3? And just using our ideal analysis before we get into any kind of parasitics or switching loss or anything, just 481 type analysis, what does the switch node voltage do during this interval? Correct. It's going to pop up to the output voltage. How'd you know that? The inductor current's flat. For the inductor current to stay flat, it has to have zero voltage on it. So this is V. That's got to be V in order for the inductor to stay at zero. And that's true in our ideal analysis. But now, given the things we've been talking about, I want to look at a more realistic depiction of this circuit. And that may have things like diode capacitance, things like MOSFET capacitance. I'll draw another one here, things like parasitic capacitance across the inductor. Called EPC or equivalent parallel capacitance of an inductor. It's always going to be there. You wind an inductor with a coil, there's capacitance between each of those turns. You'll have some parallel capacitance with any inductor you build. So now that I have all of these things, I know this isn't going to be the right answer anymore. I'm not going to have infinite DVDTs on any of my capacitances. I've got to go in and look at the operation of this. I'm going to focus really on subinterval 3 for the moment for our first example. So that's where some very interesting resonant behaviors are going on. There will also be resonance here, boundary between subinterval 1 and 2. And that's a very large current charging, discharging these three capacitances, which will bring this voltage down pretty quickly, but is a resonant circuit. It's going to slightly modify since this isn't vertical. But more interesting things go on in the subinterval 3. So I'm going to look at what happens there. So I'm going to focus here. As an example. And initially, I'm going to make an assumption here. Let's say V is equal to VG over 2. More or less what I've drawn here. Slopes of the inductor current in each interval are the same. V is about the middle. See why, and we'll look at what happens when V is not VG over 2 in a moment. So, to look at subinterval 3, I want to look at what my equivalent circuit is during this time. As I've drawn it, assuming my diode and MOSFET switch off quickly or more or less ideal, what I'm going to be left with is a circuit. I've got an input voltage source. My output voltage should be more or less DC during this time, then an inductor and three capacitors. Each of these three capacitors is connected to the switch node, and then some other node that's a DC or small signal ground. CDS goes up to the input, which is constant. CD goes down to ground, zero. And then CL goes from the switch node to the output voltage. Assuming the output capacitor is big enough that I have small ripple, it's a good DC to DC converter. That's also DC, small signal ground. The equivalent circuit I have is some equivalent capacitance. Some inductance, voltage source, VL, this is C switch, I'll call it. It has V switch across it, and it has value CDS. In parallel with CD, in parallel with CL. All three of these effectively in parallel. So lo and behold, my example circuit is going to have 1L, 1C, and some sort of DC bias involved. And I'm going to be able to apply state plane analysis. I was lucky. So if I want to do that, I want to look at the behavior of this. What do I need to do? I need to look at DC solution, initial conditions on the states and their first derivative, and then I can plot it and see what the behavior is going to be. So for this circuit, my DC solution is going to be what? V for the switch node voltage, for the voltage on the cap, for the current in the inductor.
V over R.
Where? So I see what you're doing. This is different from the converter analysis, right? Converter analysis would have the DC inductor current being whatever is supplying the load to have small ripple apply to this cap. Okay. But now I'm looking only at the AC analysis during this interval. Okay. And it's assumed the capacitor has fully decoupled anything going on with the load. So that resistance is out of it. And I'm just looking at this circuit here. So it'll be zero. I'd like it to be zero. I've overloaded my system. And the reason that we know it's going to be zero is because the inductor is directly in series with the capacitor in the circuit that I've drawn here. So if the inductor current was anything other than zero, that DC inductor current would charge the capacitor and it would run away and we wouldn't have a steady state solution. Okay. If I have any DC current here, that means I'll have a voltage on this capacitor which has a constant slope from the way to infinity or minus infinity. So I have to have zero current in the inductor for my DC voltage on the cap. Same, just the dual of the argument here. I can't have any DC voltage on my inductor. The voltage here has to be the voltage here. So I have zero DC voltage on the inductor. It means V switches V. Okay. That's my DC solution, my initial conditions. I'm going to have initial conditions V switch at time t is equal to zero. And since I'm only analyzing this subinterval 3, I'm just going to call this t is equal to zero, the start of my actual resonance that I'm analyzing. So that, reading off plot, before I go into this interval, V switch is zero. Diode is just shut off. IL of t is equal to zero is zero. And then for the purpose of eventually knowing my direction on the state plane, I'm also going to look at initial conditions of the first derivative. Say V switch prime at t is equal to zero. I use that prime to indicate first derivative with respect to time. So initially, what is the dV dt on V switch? From my initial condition, initially the inductor current zero, which means the capacitor current zero, which means its initial dV dt is zero, not changing. IL prime at t is equal to zero. So the dI dt of my inductor right at this time, voltage on it is zero, my initial condition on this capacitor voltage, minus V. So it's going to have an initial slope of minus V over L. Which is less than zero. Tell me what my direction is on the state plane. Questions there so far? Okay. So now I have what I need. I have a center for my circle, one point on the arc and a direction on which I'm going to traverse that circle. I'm going to normalize these and then plot them on the state plane on the next slide. So if I want to plot my M sub switch versus JL state plane, I need to pick a V base and I base. My V base is, in this case, I'm just going to pick VG. Once I pick that, I base is defined. It's VG over R0. And And then I'm going to normalize everything I just solved on the last slide with DC. My solution was V switch is equal to V and IL is equal to 0. If I normalize, it's going to become M switch is V over VG, which I'll call capital M. Capital M, no subscript, is conversion ratio of the converter, right? V over VG, we called that M back in 481. IL equals to 0. As I normalize that, I'll get JL equals 0. That's my DC solution. If I normalize it, what it tells me is that my center, that point M comma 0, M switches M, JL is 0. That's somewhere here. Okay, initial condition, I had V switch is equal to 0, JL is equal to 0. I normalize both, IL, jumping gun. So I normalize these and I get M switch is equal to 0 and JL is equal to 0. So here is my initial point. And then for my direction, I look at my first derivative. I had my dvdt is 0 and my didt is negative, which is going to tell me that initially my voltage isn't changing, so I should be vertical. My current is decreasing, so I'm going this way. From my initial point, initially I'm moving straight down. Voltage isn't changing, current's going down. I believe I have an animation, so I don't have to try to draw a circle. So this is the direction I'm going to move in this resonance. And I will traverse this circle with constant radius from the center. R, by inspection, the length of this radius is M. No change in J, and I go from 0 to M on my M switch axis. Okay. On the right left. Not quite enough. So top back here, what does this tell me is going to happen during this interval when I consider these capacitances? So from the initial point when I go into the subinterval 3, initially my voltage on this capacitor isn't changing, the inductor current is decreasing, and then the two begin resonating. I'm going to have something that looks like this and this. My inductor current begins decreasing. My capacitor voltage is flat initially and then slowly begins increasing, moving to the right after a little while on this M switch axis. Okay, and how far I get depends on the total amount of time, which in the state plane is how many times I revolve around that circle, and what the total angle traversed is. So I might be interested in things like, what is the peak value here of this switch node voltage? Now, when I analyzed, I reduced down to this equivalent circuit, which is the equivalent under the assumption that the diode and MOSFET are off. And this is something that you need to be careful about when you go into the state plane is, what is your normalized circuit really telling you? So it may be, depending on the amplitudes, that this voltage goes way up above the input voltage. I analyze that resonant circuit, that would be a fine solution. What would that tell me is that this voltage, switch node voltage, goes way up above the input voltage. I know it's not possible because I have a body diode here that clamps it. That body diode I took out of my equivalent circuit, right? But fundamentally, it's still there in this converter. So I have to be able to recognize that. What's that really tell me? Okay, because of body diodes, I don't really have any place to put this in. So my two diodes, the body diode on the high side and the actual power diode, the Schottky down here, and force 0 less than or equal to V switch less than or equal to VG. This voltage tries to go below 0. This diode will turn on. If it tries to go above VG, high side body diode will turn on. I go and look at my state plane. That tells me that I'm diode limited. 0 less than or equal to V switch, than or equal to VG, or 0 less than or equal to M switch, less than or equal to 1. VG divided by V base. V base is VG. Where is 1 on this? I snuck this comment in. Let's say V is equal to VG over 2. That means M, V over VG, is 1/2, which means that my maximum value here is 1. I've got two radiuses. Radius is M, which is 1/2. So I resonate up to a value of 1. Which is exactly that limit. You know, that the peak of this resonance is going to be the input voltage. I'll go just up enough to not quite turn on the diode. If I drew that well, I didn't really, this would resonate up to this same value. If my output voltage changes any, this will go higher or lower. If it tries to go any higher, I'll turn on the diode. Alter the behavior of my resonance. We'll look at both of those cases on Wednesday. Thanks, guys.